Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Marriage is Murder by Amy Nicole Walker, narrated by Tristan James. Then shall you know the wounds invisible that love's keen arrows make. William Shakespeare, As You Like It. Chapter 1. I hate to interrupt a master at work, Sawyer said hesitantly. Royce responded with a grunt. Almost there. Just trying to fit it in the hole. It requires finesse, not brute strength, you know. Another grunt echoed from behind the dryer, and a savage curse quickly followed. Sawyer bit back a chuckle as he stared down at the superb jean-clad ass sticking up in the air. Royce had somehow managed to wedge himself under the laundry room sink to reach the back of the dryer. You don't say, Sawyer remarked casually. He glanced over at Bones, who sat on top of the washing machine looking mighty pissed Royce had moved his litter box from its usual spot to reattach the dryer hose to the exterior vent. The metal ring securing it had broken at some point, which Royce had discovered when he'd attempted to clean the vent with the new shop vac he'd purchased that morning on his weekly hardware store run. They had a Saturday morning routine that started with rambunctious sex, followed by a hearty breakfast, and ended with Royce finding some excuse to visit Sal's, while Sawyer worked on newspaper puzzles and listened to audiobooks. Royce's most recent mission was to assemble a toolkit for when Drew and the boys moved into their new place the following weekend. He'd come home from Sal's, flushed with excitement because he'd put together a kick-ass toolbox and found a high-powered shop vac to rival all others. Royce enthusiastically extolled all the vacuum's features and boasted it had the strongest suction power on the market. He'd unboxed the shop vac like a little kid on Christmas morning. Sawyer had found it quite endearing until Royce had gazed at the chrome and red machine like it was the most beautiful thing in the world. He'd felt a momentary pang of jealousy until he recalled where he'd been in his audiobook before Royce had come bounding through the door with his new toy. Royce had kissed him passionately before wheeling the assembled beast into the garage to test it out. Moments later, the loud whirring sound of the machine came through the door. Bones had darted for safety while Sawyer pushed play to resume his book and returned his attention to the crossword puzzle. Sawyer smiled when he'd read the next clue, the absence of matter. Six letters. Gee, I wonder what it could be. He filled in the boxes with vacuum and moved on to the next clue. When was the last time you cleaned out the dryer vent? Royce had asked Sawyer after he'd cleaned both vehicles. Sawyer rolled his eyes toward the ceiling as if he were thinking hard about the answer. Royce had laughed, seeing through Sawyer's antics, and said, Doesn't matter, I'll take care of it now. We're supposed to meet my mom for lunch at the Hummingbird Cafe in an hour, Sawyer had reminded him. No problem. Famous last words. Noting the time constraint, Sawyer decided to assist Royce with the project, even though he could think of more exciting ways to burn off excess energy. Royce's mission started smoothly enough. He'd removed the exterior vent cover, the wire mesh guard, and stuck his vacuum hose inside the hole. Lint buildup is a huge fire hazard, Royce had said. But to his dismay, Sawyer's negligence hadn't resulted in their near death. His efforts didn't garner nearly enough lint to satisfy him, so they moved the project into the laundry room where Royce had discovered the vent hose had come loose. Dryer lint coated the wall behind the machine. Phew, that was a close call, Royce said. There's no telling how long it's been like this. 40 minutes later, after much grunting and swearing, Royce was no closer at being ready for lunch. Aha, nailed it. I'll call a press conference, Sawyer said dryly. Warm laughter filled the small room. Someone sounds a little jealous of my new toy. Sawyer snorted. Don't be ridiculous. Your mouth will always be my favorite thing that sucks, Royce said, then reached behind him. Hand me the zip tie, please. Sawyer gave him the plastic strip and continued staring at Royce's ass while he worked. There, Royce said a few seconds later. That will hold until I can buy a new ring. When he stood up, the front of his shirt was covered in dust and dryer lint. Pretty sure I found the only place in this entire house you haven't cleaned within an inch of its life. Sawyer hooked his finger in Royce's belt loop and pulled him close. I'll correct the oversight going forward. Thanks for saving my life. I'll collect my reward when we get back, Royce said, pecking a quick kiss on Sawyer's lips. Sawyer didn't go anywhere near the bedroom while Royce got ready, so they wouldn't end up late. No one kept Evangeline O'Neill waiting. Is the Hummingbird Cafe that new restaurant that opened around Valentine's Day? Royce asked once they were in the SUV and backing down the driveway. That was the weekend of the soft launch for friends, family, and investors to sample the menu and celebrate before the public grand opening, Sawyer said. My mom and dad fall into the latter category and can't stop singing the cafe's praises. They arrived at the restaurant with a few minutes to spare, but Sawyer spotted his mom's car in the lot already. The exterior of the building was red brick and glass, with a classic black sign above the doorway. The big picture windows overlooking the sidewalk had a colorful garden etched in the glass. Flowers, butterflies, and hummingbirds adorned the bottom of the frame. Trellises with blooming vines took up the sides, and a canopy of blossoms cascaded over the top. Once inside, Sawyer scanned the crowded cafe, but didn't see Evangeline. Perhaps they had additional seating elsewhere. A black woman with short, curly hair, amber eyes, and an engaging smile stepped up to the hostess station. She wore a pink polo shirt with the cafe's logo and the name Rita embroidered on the front, dark jeans and floral chucks. "Welcome to the Hummingbird Cafe," she said cheerfully. "Will it just be the two of you?" "No, we're meeting my mother," Sawyer said, "but I don't see her." "Evangeline?" Rita asked. Sawyer smiled. "The one and only. We set her up in the garden out back. Follow me." Sawyer admired the farmhouse chic decor as they walked through the cafe. The aromas emanating from the kitchen made his stomach growl. He glanced over at Royce and caught him sniffing the air appreciatively. "Is this your first visit with us?" Rita asked.
"It is," Royce replied. "But it won't be the last if the food tastes half as good as it smells."
Rita looked over her shoulder and said,
"I promise the food tastes even better."
She pushed open the door to the garden area before Royce could respond to her bold claim, and all their attention diverted to the splendor around them.
"Whoa,"
Sawyer whispered as he took in the setting. The owners had divided the space into dozens of seating sections, each one surrounded by its own private garden to give it an air of intimacy. A red brick path wound throughout the mini gardens, and a black wrought iron fence separated the eating area from a lush garden with dozens of hummingbird feeders hanging from the trees. Butterflies flitted around from flower to bush as a gentle breeze rustled the branches overhead.
"This is beautiful," Royce said. "Like, stunning."
"Thank you," Rita said. "My husband Ryan is the master chef, but I'm the visionary when it comes to the design. We each know our strengths and work hard to stay out of the other's lane."
Rita stopped at a table in the far corner. Evangeline rose and greeted Sawyer and Royce with a hug and a kiss. She wore a pale pink sheath dress and nude heels that put her at nearly the same height as Royce and Sawyer. Evangeline's dark hair tumbled around her face in soft, romantic waves. She wore minimal makeup and a sheer lip tint, allowing her natural beauty to shine through. Evangeline formally introduced Rita to them, and Sawyer never tired of hearing Royce referred to as his fiancée.
"It's lovely to meet you both," Rita said. "Matteo will be your server today, and he'll be right with you." "Isn't this place something?" Evangeline asked. "It's all anyone is talking about right now."
"It's absolutely stunning," Royce said. "It's kind of how I envisioned our pool area, but I didn't get anywhere close to this kind of magic."
Evangeline looked up from her menu and patted his hand.
"Don't sell yourself short, dear. You created an incredible oasis."
Leaning into Royce, Sawyer said, "It's my favorite part of our house."
"Yeah?"
Royce asked.
Definitely.
Sawyer gave the menu his full attention and was impressed by the variety of food offered. The cafe served traditional southern classics one would expect to find in Georgia, as well as fare from other regions, specifically New Orleans.
I can't remember the last time I had black-eyed peas and dirty rice, Sawyer said. I can't decide if I want baby back ribs or fried chicken.
Royce looked over at him. Not salad today, huh? Maybe as a starter.
Mateo arrived at the table with a basket of homemade biscuits and honey butter. He took their drink orders and left them alone to decide on food.
I say we get a variety of things to share, Evangeline said. I think the Hummingbird Cafe would be a wonderful choice to cater your wedding reception.
Royce glanced up from his menu and smiled. She's wearing her wedding planner hat today. When their engagement became official, Evangeline volunteered to plan and organize their special day. Neither of them had seen a reason why they should refuse. Jace and Holly had experienced nothing but trouble with the wedding planners they'd hired, and neither Royce nor Sawyer had the free time to do it themselves. Royce was still investigating homicides until his Explorer program was up and running. Sawyer split his duties between investigating cold cases and working with the Sinister in Savannah podcast team on an initiative to locate Savannah's missing people. The podcast's success and worldwide popularity was an investigative tool Sawyer couldn't pass up. Felix, Jonah, and Rocky had pitched the concept to him, and Mendoza had jumped all over the opportunity. Evangeline planted her elbow on the table, leaned forward, and rested her chin in the palm of her hand.
You know, it would be nice if you would pick a wedding date so I can get going in earnest.
Mom, we don't want to pull focus from Jason Holly's wedding, Sawyer said. They're getting married in 2 weeks. Why don't we wait until after their special day before we start planning ours?
He's getting cold feet, Royce said.
Neither Evangeline nor Sawyer acknowledged the ridiculous remark.
I understand you don't want to tread all over Jace and Holly's wedding, Evangeline said. And I agree. I hadn't planned on taking out an announcement in the paper or anything. I'm talking discreet inquiries on available venues. 2 weeks might not seem like a lot of time to wait, but I assure you most venues have been booked for a solid year. This one, Evangeline said, patting Royce's hand, said he wants to be married and honeymooned before the Explorer program officially kicks off in September. That gives me May through mid-August.
Sawyer and Royce exchanged a glance.
Okay, they said.
Evangeline clapped and pulled a notebook and pen from her handbag.
We're getting somewhere.
She launched into the different types of venues and the pros and cons of each. She probably would have talked for hours if Sawyer hadn't reached across the table and covered her hand.
We don't want anything too formal, Sawyer said.
Speak for yourself. I want a celebration to end all others to mark our special day, Royce said.
He broke apart a biscuit and slathered honey butter on both pieces. Royce handed half to Sawyer before taking a bite of the other. Royce made appreciative noises as he chewed.
These are almost as good as Evangeline's.
She scoffed and waved him off.
I know damn well they're better than mine. No need to worry about my feelings.
Sawyer ignored his biscuit too long, so Royce snatched it and devoured it too. Sawyer reached over and wiped crumbs from the corner of his mouth. Animal? His remark only received a shrug. Sawyer returned his attention to Evangeline, who seemed to be glowing exceptionally bright. He knew it was time to establish some ground rules for the wedding. We want an intimate gathering with our family and closest friends.
I think a ticker tape parade would be nice, Royce said.
A marching band, perhaps.
Sawyer splayed his hand over Royce's face like a starfish and ignored his suggestions. No churches, no riverboats, and nothing gimmicky.
Royce licked Sawyer's palm, and he snatched his hand back.
Don't listen to him. A horse-drawn carriage sounds pretty.
Sawyer laughed. Okay, Cinderfella.
Do you think they'd let me guide the horses? Royce asked.
No,
Sawyer replied. Evangeline bounced her gaze between them, smiling the entire time.
So, we want something informally formal, intimate yet grand, but not in a church or on a riverboat. You'd like a parade featuring the grooms in a horse-drawn carriage. Did I get it all?
Marching band, Royce said before he chomped into another buttered biscuit.
Sawyer marveled at how Royce could eat whatever he wanted and never seemed to gain any weight, while Sawyer had to eat moderately and constantly exercise to maintain his physique.
Evangeline giggled and made another note.
Sawyer glanced up and saw a brawny lumberjack disguised as a chef making his way toward them.
"Rita told me our biggest fan was dining with us today," the man said when he stopped at their table.
"And I brought my newest fan club recruits with me," Evangeline said, then introduced Sawyer and Royce to Ryan.
"You have a lovely restaurant," Royce said. Ryan beamed with pride as he looked around.
"Thank you. This part was my wife's vision."
"You should see it at night," Evangeline said. "There are hundreds of fairy lights tucked into the trees. It's like something out of a movie." "Oh!"
She fumbled in her purse and removed her cell phone.
"I took pictures. I'm sure they won't do the real thing justice, but it will give you an idea. And the smell from the jasmine this summer will be phenomenal."
Evangeline showed them a picture of Sawyer's parents taken in the cafe garden, and the fairy lights did cast a warm, romantic glow. He thought the happiness radiating from his parents was even more beautiful than the twinkling lights. Sawyer smiled and looked up at Ryan. "It's incredibly romantic."
"Ryan," Evangeline said, "have you considered renting the outdoor space for special events, say, wedding receptions?"
"We've been talking about it, but didn't want to bite off more than we can chew," Ryan replied.
Evangeline patted him on the shoulder.
"I know two guinea pigs you could experiment on."
"Guinea pigs, Mom?" Sawyer asked in disbelief.
"Poor phrasing," she agreed. "I am adamantly opposed to testing anything on animals."
Sawyer leaned into Royce. "But your son and future son-in-law are fair game." Ryan chuckled.
"When's the big day?"
"We're still hammering out that little detail," Evangeline replied. "I'm hoping to have a firm date soon."
"Tell you what," Ryan said. "Let me know what you decide, and the garden is all yours. I'd be honored to host your reception here."
Mateo smiled as he approached, then looked at Ryan.
"Chef, Oren needs you in the kitchen."
"Oren is my sous chef," Ryan replied. "I better get back in there. It was good to meet you both. I hope you enjoy your meals."
Once Ryan left, Mateo took their orders. They selected a wide variety of dishes, and Evangeline planned to mark down the ones they wanted to include for their reception meal. Before the plates came out, Royce's phone rang.
"No, no, no," he said, when he saw the caller ID.
He stood up and walked a few feet away. Sawyer kept his eyes on Royce, noting the disappointment and resignation washing over his face as he listened to the call. Evangeline said something, but Sawyer didn't register her words. The call was brief, probably just long enough to give Royce an address and possibly a short description of what he was walking into, but not much else. Royce promptly returned to the table, but didn't reclaim his seat. He leaned over and brushed a kiss on Evangeline's cheek.
"Please forgive me," he said.
She patted his face.
"There's nothing to forgive, honey. Be careful."
Royce nodded and walked around the table to cup Sawyer's face.
"I'm damn sorry. Just a few more months, then these homicides will be someone else's problem."
Royce leaned down and pressed a kiss to Sawyer's lips, lingering for several heartbeats.
"I love you."
"I love you most." Sawyer watched him walk away, hating the tension in Royce's frame.
"I read an article claiming that we're on pace to have a record number of homicides this year," Evangeline said. "It's so sad."
"Tragic," Sawyer agreed.
"And the string of armed robberies plaguing the city is terrifying," his mom added. "They just brazenly stroll into small businesses in broad daylight while wearing masks and brandishing guns and walk right back out with all the cash in the store. Why haven't they been caught?"
It was the same question everyone had been asking, the citizens, the press, and especially the mayor who was up for re-election.
Mendoza was under merciless scrutiny from the mayor and commissioner, which he rained down on Royce because he supervised the officers investigating the burglaries. The tension inside the precinct and around the city was swelling toward an ugly crescendo with every new robbery and each day that passed without an arrest. Sawyer's biggest concern was citizens taking the matter into their own hands. Up to that point, the gunman had been solely focused on retrieving the cash from the safes and getting back out. No shots had been fired, and no one had been harmed. Sawyer had a bad feeling their luck wouldn't hold much longer. "They choose smart locations," Sawyer said. "Easy access in and out. Places that do a lot of cash business, but won't spend any of it toward the most basic security measures. It's not the same two guys each time, based on witness descriptions of height and weight. We think there's between 4 to 6 people in the crew. Maybe more. They hide their faces beneath Spider-Man or Deadpool masks to cover their eyes and mouths. They cover every inch of skin with black clothes, so witnesses can't see identifying details like tattoos or birthmarks. They always wear gloves and don't leave behind forensic evidence we can use. Their voices are calm and modulated and never give anything away." Evangeline shivered and rubbed her bare arms.
"Sounds like the perfect crime."
"We'll catch them," Sawyer said. "I just hope innocent people don't get caught in the crosshairs before we do." His mom trembled again.
"Time to change the subject. How are things going with your new Sinister in Savannah partnership?"
Sawyer and the Sinister team recorded an episode twice a month featuring a missing Savannah native. They conducted interviews with the families and posted them to a dedicated website, along with pictures and details of each case. They even set up a hotline to collect tips. The podcast's popularity had brought about a partnership with GeneMatch, the genealogy database used to catch a notorious serial killer who'd terrorized the West Coast for decades. They also worked closely with NAMUS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. Jonah and Avery, his boyfriend, developed software to generate age-enhanced photos of the missing people that exceeded the capabilities of all other tools available. Sinister in Savannah had also established a YouTube channel to reach a whole new demographic, and they'd received millions of views during the first month of their channel. "We're still figuring things out along the way," Sawyer said, "but overall I think it's going well. We haven't solved any of our cases yet, but it's just a matter of time."
"I'm proud of you, Sawyer."
"Thanks, Mom. That means a lot to me." Sawyer glanced over and saw Mateo and Rita heading toward them with loaded trays. He explained Royce had been called into work, and Rita assured him they'd box up the leftovers so he could enjoy them later. Sawyer and Evangeline devoured the delicious food, even if Royce's departure had sucked the joy out of their day the way Royce's new shop vac had pulled the lint from the dryer vent. Sawyer thought of Royce's giddy joy over his new toy and couldn't help but smile.
"Well," Evangeline said some time later, "everything was exquisite. How could we possibly narrow down the dishes to a few? People don't RSVP anymore. We'll go into the event not knowing who is coming or if they have allergies."
"I say we go buffet style with enough food to feed an army," Sawyer said. "We can always donate what we don't use."
"Deal."
She jotted down a few notes, then turned to a clean page. "Now that we've gotten the wedding stuff started, I want to pivot to something that's been occupying my thoughts lately."
"Okay."
Sawyer was sure he knew where the conversation was headed. His answer, however, was less certain. Evangeline leaned forward and held his gaze.
"Are you going to run for sheriff?"
Chapter 2. When Royce had pulled up to the Pirate's House restaurant, he figured he'd seen it all and that nothing could shock him at that point in his career. He'd gone through the usual steps of putting on his PPE, signing in at the scene, and chatting with the responding officers, Jennifer Wang and Sierra Knight, who happened to be two of his favorites. Something in their expressions had tipped Royce off that this crime scene was like no other he'd ever seen. his brows edged toward his hairline as they described arriving on location.
"Shot through the heart with an arrow?"
Royce had asked when they'd finished. Wang nodded.
"He landed on the wedding cake."
"Smashed it to bits," Knight added.
"Vanilla cake with strawberry filling."
Tara arrived before Royce could say anything further. She greeted the patrol officers and asked them to bring her up to speed. Royce noticed what looked like the top of a hickey peeking out from the collar of her shirt. He knew Tara and Candy had gone out a few times since he'd reintroduced them 2 months ago, but neither had mentioned the dates to him, and he didn't push. He really, really wanted to, though. As if sensing Royce's attention on her, Tara rolled her shoulders and adjusted her shirt before meeting his gaze with a quirked brow.
"Shot through the heart with an arrow?" she asked Royce. "I had the same reaction. Does that make Cupid our prime suspect? Or someone living out Bon Jovi lyrics?"
Tara replied.
"Who discovered the body?"
"The cake designer,"
Knight replied.
"She'd set up the wedding cake, then responded to an emergency on another job. When she came back to collect her payment, she found the guy collapsed onto her display. She and the others are out back waiting for you to interview them."
"Others?" Tara asked. "Who else is back there?"
Wang referred to her notes.
"The catering staff hired to work the venue and the restaurant manager."
"Catering staff?" Royce asked. "Why would you rent a restaurant as a venue and not eat their food? Seems kind of rude." Knight and Wang exchanged a glance before shrugging.
"If you don't need anything else," Wang said, "we'll join the officers canvassing the neighborhood."
"Let us know right away if you come up with a witness," Tara said.
"Will do,"
Knight replied. They thanked the officers and headed into the section of the restaurant where the medical examiner, Dr. Fox, and the crime scene technicians were hard at work. Even though Wang and Knight had told them about the macabre scene, Royce was still caught off guard when he laid eyes on the middle-aged man sprawled on top of a table where a wedding cake had been set up. It was impossible to tell how many tiers the cake had once had, but based on the vanilla sponge and strawberry carnage, Royce would guess there'd been several. Sure enough, there was an arrow sticking out of the victim's chest, and a large circle of blood had pooled on his pale blue polo shirt and spread down to his khaki pants. The man had wrapped both hands around the arrow, probably in an attempt to pull it free, and maintained his grip in death. Blood also trickled from his slack mouth. Wide-set blue eyes, a shade darker than his shirt, stared sightlessly at the ceiling. The victim's hair was mostly blonde with some graying at the temples. He'd meticulously styled the strands and lacquered them into place. The cut reminded Royce of his sister's old Ken doll, minus the matted cake and icing. Dr. Fox looked up from her examination and nodded.
"We meet again, Sergeant Locke and Detective South."
"Ma'am?" Tara replied with a polite nod.
"No offense, Doc, but I'm seeing you more often than I'd like," Royce told her.
She smiled, but it didn't lessen the wariness in her gaze.
"Likewise."
Royce studied the body again.
"Who do we have here?"
A young lady on Fox's crew handed him an evidence bag with a wallet in it.
"Thanks," he said,
reaching inside it with his gloved hand.
"Leonard Fellows," Royce said,
then read off his address for Tara to jot down.
"I'll get a warrant to search his home,"
Tara said, as Royce looked through the wallet. He found the usual cards, bank, credit, health insurance, and business. The latter ranged from florists to bakers and dressmakers to clergy members, not the typical business cards Royce found in a man's wallet. The last card in the stack explained the unusual collection.
"Leonard goes by Leo," Royce said, "and he owns Cupid's Arrow. They plan weddings."
Royce hoped like hell Leo Fellows wasn't one of the planners Jace had fired. He'd hate for his big brother to be a suspect in a murder investigation 2 weeks before his wedding. Royce raised his head and met his partner's inscrutable expression.
"Their company's slogan is, 'Our aim is true.'"
Royce turned the card around to show Tara the logo in the upper left corner, an arrow through a red heart. They both looked over at the prone man. Curiouser.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?